Welcome to Roadcase, the podcast that explores the live music experience. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Josh Rosenberg, and I'll be taking you on a journey through in-depth interviews with performers and key people in the industry to explore the magic of live music, how it can be totally transformative for both fans and performers, and we'll look at how they take it all out on the road. It's going to be a great ride, so here we go. Okay, welcome back to Roadcase, everybody. This is your host, Josh Rosenberg, and this is episode 225 of Roadcase Podcast. I'm so glad that you're all along for this one. Really happy to have you all here for my interview with Anders Bech of Green Sky Bluegrass. This is a momentous week in live music with Phish just completing their four-night run at the Sphere in Las Vegas. I wasn't able to go to those, but wow. I watched a couple of the live streams, bought them all, making my way through them, but holy crap, those were amazing shows. It's really the future of live music, at least for now, the future of live music at the Sphere, but it has really raised the bar for what can be done in a live setting. So psyched to have you all. We got so many great interviews, and I've talked to so many amazing artists, and we have tons of interviews coming up. And I want to remind everybody that a great way to keep in touch with Roadcase is to follow us on the socials. We're at Roadcase Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can also, you want to reach out to us and to me in particular at Roadcase, you can send us an email at info@roadcasepod.com. And if you want to find out more information about Roadcase, you can visit our website. That's roadcasepod.com. You can also follow Roadcase on your favorite listening platform. On Spotify, there's a little box that says follow. On Apple Podcasts, there's a check mark up in the upper right-hand corner. Just click on that. And a great way to help support Roadcase, please review us and rate us. It's a great way to help support this podcast. You can do that on Spotify just by clicking on those three little dots right next to the follow box. Simple as that. And on Apple Podcasts, scroll up a little bit. There's some stars and a place to write a review. And I think you guys can handle it from there. So glad you're along for this one. Anders Bech is the dobro player for Green Sky Bluegrass. He came into the band about 20 years ago, and they have built an absolutely incredible foundation by playing hundreds of shows a year to their broad fan base. It's just an absolutely amazing show. I love these guys, and their studio albums are also exceptional. Their latest from 2022 is entitled Stress Dreams, and it is absolutely worth a listen. I absolutely love it. These guys are just coming off their winter tour, which they wrapped up with a two-night run at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville, which featured guest appearances from Billy Strings, Sam Bush, and Daniel Donato, among others. They just announced a summer tour that's going to kick off on June 6th in Kansas City. That also includes dates later on in June, July, August, September, including two nights at Red Rocks on September 13th and 14th, and a double bill where Green Sky is playing in support of Tedeschi Trucks at the SPAC in Saratoga Springs, New York on August 30th. For those interested in learning more about Green Sky, I also interviewed Paul Hoffman back on September 17th, 2021. You can look that up on your favorite listening platform. That was early episode number 72. For me, Green Sky kind of transcends the borders of bluegrass, really more for me like a rock band with acoustic instruments, but with bluegrass roots, and I absolutely love it. Like I said, Anders plays dobro, which is an instrument similar to guitar with an amazing enduring sound and incredible sustain that really appeals to me personally. But above all, Anders loves live music, and to him, music is live music. It's playing music, it's playing with his friends and bandmates, and he just has a really unique spirit and self-reflecting quality that I totally resonate with. He's also fairly close to my age, and so like me, he kind of came up listening to and going to Grateful Dead shows, which in his case, really shaped his decision very deeply to pursue a career in music. And I'm so happy to have Anders. In terms of timing, I only had limited time with Anders. It's about a 45 to 50 minute-ish interview. I would like like to have had a little bit more time, but c'est la vie in this business. And I'm really happy to have Anders. Just wanted to give you that kind of timing context and note. I am so glad to have you all along for this amazing episode with the truly amazing Anders Beck of Green Sky Bluegrass. So thanks to all of you for being here for this episode. And I want to send a special thank you to Anders Beck of Green Sky Bluegrass for being here on this episode of Roadcase. And here we go. Hey, Anders. Great to see you, man. Thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, finally got a captive audience. So really happy to have you, man. I'm a big fan of Green Sky. And your work as well. I talked to Jerry Douglas at Newport Folk, and so that was cool. I'm a big Dobro fan. You know, I mean, I don't roll too deep, but I love the sound and I love what you do. And it was also fun talking to Jerry. I had great things to say about you as well.
That's cool.
Yeah.
He's the best, you know, as far as like, you know, with Dobro, there's not really any way to learn. So like, at least when I was learning, you know, 25 years ago or whatever it was, like, you know, you just start listening to stuff and that was it. I mean, there's a couple guys around, I was in Durango, Colorado. There's a couple guys around that played a little bit, but you know, it was more just listen to Jerry Douglas on all the old albums and stuff. And
yeah,
that was it for a while.
Yeah. You started out as a guitar player.
Yeah. Well, I started as a drummer when I was a really young kid, like, you know, in my early teens, and then turned into a guitar player. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then did that for a while. And, you know, really, it's funny. I'm not really good at guitar anymore. Cause no, once you start playing Dobro and getting really good at it, like, no one wants you to play guitar anymore. That's for sure.
There's multi factors there. Probably you already said there's not a lot of Dobro players. So
yeah,
kind of the thing that when I had Travis on the show, Travis Bowe from Infamous String Dusters, mm-hmm. he was like, my mom told me to play the bass cause someone always needs a bass player.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically, it was more accidental than that, but kind of like, yeah, if you're sitting around, there's always a bunch of guitar players, you know, and so Dobro just kind of worked out that way. But I also I really love the instrument. I think it's so cool. I think it's a very vocal, like lyrical instrument.
It really is. I talked to Jerry about that specifically, about tone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very vocal.
Yeah. It's, you know, that's what I love about it. Like, you know, you can, I'm not a very good singer, so I can sing through that instrument, you know, and it's like, yeah. it can really sound like a voice. That's what I love about it. So you can really pull at emotions and, you know, like, yeah, it's emotional sounding to me, which is what I love about it, you know, like, I wouldn't call Green Sky really, we play bluegrass.
Yeah.
I don't think of us as bluegrass, that's for sure. But,
yeah.
But in like bluegrass music per se, like real bluegrass music,
mm-hmm.
like there's very few instruments that can make a note longer than like plink.
Right.
Like that's a guitar note lasts like this long, ding, mm-hmm. you know, and that's like, that's the longest note. And mandolins and banjos, the notes are so short. And then so fiddles and dobros kind of fill this role that I love, where it's like, you know, if you can go, you know, it's like you're singing all of a sudden, and that's cool to me.
Yeah, and when you're playing, is that not having that that the other instruments intrinsically may not have the sustain that you can achieve with Dobro? Is that, do you achieve that as well when you're playing Dobro acoustically?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, yeah, for sure. The instrument has really good sustain because of the way it's built, like with the resonator cone and all this. I mean, it's a mechanical instrument. It's pretty cool. I guess it was probably Saturday, which is a couple of days ago. You don't know what day it is on a podcast, but a couple of days ago,
yeah.
We were at the Salt Shed in Chicago, and
uh-huh.
the day before the cone inside my Dobro, I could just tell it was like, was getting it was dead, you know, and they get compressed. It's like a speaker cone, you know? And so I put a new one in. The thing sounded like $1 million. It was awesome.
Oh, did you go to Chicago Music Exchange to have that done? You have someone here, you just like do it yourself, or what do you do?
I just do it myself.
And it's a cone? Like, explain that a little bit.
I mean, it's hard to explain in words. It's like,
is it similar, analogous to like the sound? It's the sound hole. So it's something that's structure.
It's in the sound hole, but it literally looks like a speaker, the inside of a speaker. Because it's made out of metal, you know?
Okay.
And so like the strings touch the bridge, which touches this other thing, that like fans out, and the feet of this like spider bridge touch parts of this metal speaker cone. And so therefore you've got like the instrument's louder. It's got more sustain.
Yeah.
And you know, it was created kind of just to be a loud, it was like an electric guitar before there was electric guitar, you know?
Yeah. Right.
To be louder than horns and big bands and stuff. And the bluegrass guys kind of grabbed onto it.
Yeah. Are you searching for a tone? Like, or have you achieved that tone? I talked to Jerry a little bit. I don't mean to keep bringing him up because I admire your playing as well, but he's like the guy. But when I was talking to him, I thought about you a lot. Jerry talked about achieving a particular, like there's a tone goal for him and he still has yet to achieve that perfect tone. Can you, do you resonate with that at all? Just not to mix metaphors.
Well, as long as you talked about me as much in his interview, that's fine.
I absolutely did, dude.
Just
I
kidding.
Will send you the link to that one.
I'm just messing with you.
Point well taken, but, man. I love that.
I have a lot. In Green Sky, I have a lot of different tones that I get out of the dobro, which is like one of the things that, you know, it's weird to. I mean, like, I occasionally people will tell me, like, that I have created, you know, like, what I've done for the dobro, the instrument, and creating new tones and stuff, and, like, electric stuff. And, like, I feel weird saying it myself, but, like, I've taken that thing on a pretty big quest for, like, different sounds, right? So, like, there's the acoustic dobro tone, which is, you know, my the clean tone, right? And with that, I definitely haven't achieved like peak tone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm bummed that Jerry says he hasn't either because he hasn't.
I'm sorry. I didn't look at it from like, that perspective.
No, but listen to this. It's like, cause like my peak, like what I'm going for would be like it's like that Jerry Douglas. So like sometimes in recordings, I'll be like, okay, I want this to sound like, you know, Alison Krauss, Jerry stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And we try and engineer it that way. But like so much of it is in the hands, like really just, and to the point that like, if I hand my dobro to like Andy Hall or Jerry Douglas or someone like that, it sounds like them. It doesn't sound like me, you know, mm-hmm. It's all in the hands. And
yeah.
And so that's really cool. I sound like myself. And I think that's something that I've strived for. And I don't think that's actually a tone thing as much as it's like an idea thing, like the way I think about music, mm-hmm. and that comes through because I'm proficient at music.
Yeah.
You know, it comes through as my thing,
right.
but there's so many dobro players that sound just like Jerry Douglas. And that was never of interest to me, even though I would love to sound like him.
Yeah.
If I ever got to that point, I would take, you know, quickly take a left turn and go back to being myself. But I really have always strived to sort of sound like me. And you know, that's, yeah, comparison in art is weird.
Yeah,
right?
I don't want to take it. Don't let me. I'm not trying to take you down that road of self-doubt
whatsoever. No, not at all.
I want to underscore that I love your tone. I love what you do with Green Sky, and I want to talk about that a whole bunch. Like,
so for me, what I'm saying is that this self-doubt is not from you, man. That's just my trip, and it always will be. And that's everybody's thing. In music, that's a big part of the thing. Is like, you know, because all my friends are musicians, and we're all creating stuff at the same time. And it's like, it, and we talk about this stuff too. It's like that, that sort of, like on a personal level, that, that like, just like self-doubt of art is a big thing, you know? And it's,
yeah.
I suspect that it's in everybody's world.
Do you think, is it know? A motivator for you? In a sense, like maybe that wasn't so, you know, I can always kind of achieve more. Maybe that wasn't so great. Or, you know, I know self-criticism is a double-edged sword. And, you know, you've talked a lot about mental health issues and mental health awareness and how to get that voice out of your head. And I'd love to talk to you a little bit about that mindset as well, because clearly that's something that you've thought quite a bit about. And then it, I sort of think about also in the live setting where you get so many opportunities to create your own shit on a daily, almost on a daily basis, so to speak. And where, so how is your head with that? You know, when you take that kind of self-doubt mental battle that we all face, that I face, that so many people face, does that also factor into what we're talking about?
I don't think it's a, I don't think it's a motivator so much for me personally, as much as it's just like, this is like
trying
this,
to put a positive this, spin on it.
Yeah, trying to get this thing out. But like, you know, to get back to tones, like I, so there's that kind of clean tone where I was just talking about how, like, you know, Jerry's the king of that shit. And then I've got sort of my electric tone, that like that, that shreddy tone, that's the different, that's totally different than anybody else is doing.
Which I fucking love.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts in a show. Like, it was bonkers.
On a good night, I'd love it too.
Come on, tell you have a boost pedal or something, right? That just actually kicks in and just crushes at the right moments. And I love you for, I love your playing for that, among
others. It's a whole separate channel that goes to an amplifier to like an amp behind me that's cranked up. So it's like, it's not like fake amp tone. It's not like a shreddy pedal where you press a button and it goes shreddy. You know,
it's like a whole other system.
It's a whole other channel. Yeah. It's a whole other system. Fucking so man. It is real, because, and the reason I mentioned that is because we've been for so long, we're trying to figure out how to get this tone. And it was like, we wanted to sound like a real amp. And then it was finally like, Well,
why don't we just,
why don't we just use a real amp? And it all opened up, you know?
It's so like, funny when, like, you just, like, verbally talk about a way to solve a problem and it's, like, hitting you right in the fucking face.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing, isn't it? And so, like, and then so, there, and, you know, and some people have been, and I sort of stumbled upon that with an engineer friend of mine man.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a totally different sound.
And you do it, you don't overuse it. You use it at the right moments, and it just feels really great at a show. And before I forget to say, I'm from Chicago. I wasn't able to make it to the Salt Surge show, but I've listened to the first set on Nugs. Mm. And I don't know what you're doing on this tour in specifically, but I've been to a lot of Green Sky shows, and you were fucking on that set one in Chicago. Now you're telling me that the cone, that was a thing, and like you got it fixed, and now the pieces are kind of falling into place, or am I just kind of creating that scenario?
I was
shredding in that first set with some great tone on almost every. I sometimes leave a Green Sky show, and I'm like, there wasn't enough Anders in that show sometimes.
I was on fire that night. I was texting with a friend of mine after the show, and I was saying that I think I played one of the best shows I've ever played in my life that night.
Awesome,
you know,
awesome.
And it was like, and it's, you know, and sort of that, like, and they were asking why, and I'm like, well, I don't know. I
mean,
I can tell you what I think, but whatever, kind of doesn't matter. Like there's certain, for me, there's certain things, like when it's like it's like a flow state, you know, and I think that there's, you know, interpersonal reasons as to why I'm getting there right now, particularly, but. What I was explaining to them was that, like, often, and I've talked to a couple people about it recently since then, just a couple days ago, but like traditionally when I notice it happening, like, I'll be like, man, I'm fucking killing it. Or like, this is, wow, this is an amazing jam or it's all building correctly the right way, or I'm doing, there's not as much impediment between my brain and my hands or whatever it is. And I start to, I'm playing and I start to realize it. And I'm like, oh man, I'm killing it. And the second that thought happens, it's gone. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's obviously, you know, that's, there's metaphor for life in there somewhere. Yeah. And it's like, you snap back into it, but you snap back into it to be joyous about it and be like, holy shit, this is awesome. And the second that happens, it's gone. Oh, and like, it's because you thought about it.
Yes.
And so for me, that's like, but that other night, it seemed like that wasn't, I could think about it and then not ruin it, you know?
I know so many things in what you just said, like, let's unpack just like one thing. Like all of a sudden you're just like, in your body completely, out of your head, playing, doing whatever. It happens with me on an interview, in a podcast. I'll be having a great conversation. The second I think like, oh, what time is it? How much time do I have? What's going on? Am I doing the right thing? I'm not looking at my notes. I want to talk about this, that, the other. It's fucking gone. But don't you find, do you find yourself like going, and that's just a thing about life. And it's, and that's, it happens to you on stage and it happens to others in their own worlds. And it's analogous that way. Is there something that you can do? Have you ever found that that happens to you when you get up in your head, but then you're like, okay, yeah, that's my head. Get back in the body. That's a hard technique. Wow. Especially
I'm
on the
sure.
fly in a live setting.
Yeah. In front of thousands of people, you know,
not the ideal place to start. Yeah. Like, you know,
well, you're right. Just started psychoanalyzing myself, but I do.
What's Anders doing over there? Why is he sitting down in a puddle and crying?
But I mean, but I do that too. You know, it's like,
it's like, a good thing to notice. Let's just say that. Right.
Yeah. And songs, you know, and you know, I'm listening to the songs too. I was thinking about this the other day also, where like, you know, as like, I love Paul's songs. I love Dave's songs. Right.
Yeah.
And so like, and I'm a fan of those songs, which is weird to say, cause I'm on stage playing them. Right.
Yeah.
But like, I'm listening too, you know, and it's like, as my life changes or like relationships change in my life, these songs, like, you know, when people are like, oh, this song helped me through a dark time or something like that. Right. We hear that a lot, which is amazing. I'm super grateful for that.
Yeah.
But like, I'm kind of like that too, which is weird to say, right? Like those songs mean things to me, and they mean different things to me as I've
at different times
as my life has changed. You know, relationships have changed, whatever, and like songs that meant one thing to me years ago now mean something else to me. And it, partially that's because those guys write great songs.
Yeah,
but it's like, I guess my point was like, as much as I'm a active participant in when we're doing it live, I'm really also like an active listener too, you know?
Yeah. You're a fan.
And not just in like improvisational way, like, oh, I listen to everybody so I can play with them. But like, you know, I can get gut wrenched by one of Paul's lyrics too. You know, like,
it's interesting because you're in that unique position with that band where you're not singing. So you don't necessarily have to insert yourself vocally and emotionally with your whole body and your voice, which is a whole other gig, right? That I talked to Paul about and I talked to vocalists about. Yeah, that's very interesting. You can kind of sit there and I see that sometimes. And now that I'm thinking about it, that you're just fucking enjoying the goddamn show. And then you hop in and then I'm like, that's why I think, like, I swear, Anders, like during shows, I like your vibe so much because I resonate with your vibe and I kind of get that. And that makes a lot of sense. And that's why I was, you know, I'd been talking to you about just come on the show. I want to talk to you, man. because I get that. And I see that as well, that, you know, and you'll jump in at a particular part of a song and just make it so much better in a way that, like, I'll be resonating with the song and the vibe. And then all of a sudden, here comes fucking Anders to just, like, project musically what the fuck I was feeling in my goddamn gut. And I want to thank you for that. And does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, dude, that's what I'm going for.
Right on, I mean, man. You know, it's like, mission accomplished.
It's like the dobro, to bring it back to the instrument, it's like that vocal nature of the instrument. It's like, it's almost like I can comment.
I know. I'm
on
there.
What,
I hear
what's
you,
happening
dude.
With the instrument. That's cool.
I fucking hear you, dude. That's why your show, that's working. Why when I'm at a show, I'm standing, I go to fucking Anders, man. You've seen me up there like grooving at the fucking show. That's because I fucking, I love your shirt, by the way, that I'm just seeing. FOMO is a mofo. Where can I get that?
I don't know. We got it at a venue in North Carolina somewhere.
That's awesome.
Check it.
FOMO is a mofo. It really is. Yeah. I got to look for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that, and because Green Sky is really, in my own opinion, and Paul agreed with this, is a rock band, basically, playing bluegrass undertones and themes. You know, it's that being able to punch that so emphatically that you're doing when you come in with a unbelievably long sustained note. And I've never timed one, but they've got to be 30 seconds long or something once in a while. It's a beautiful thing, man. But let's look, I wanted to just circle back a little bit that you said, like right now, because you've been resonating with the songs, there were some interpersonal reasons why things are feeling really good for you right now. Did I catch that right? Or
you're
just like in a good place in your life.
I'm just, you know, it's all probably cyclical, right?
Yeah, for sure. But let's rejoice in this moment.
Yeah, right. Celebrate the wins when you can. Right.
With gratitude.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. And just, you know, I've just been doing a lot of work on myself as best I can. And just like, you know, trying to really sort of revel in positivity when there's, you know, there's just like, just, you know, whether it's like, you know, for me, it's like, whether it's therapy or whatever it is, you know, like mental health stuff, which to me has showed up through sobriety some fair amount, like, but putting a little bit of work into how what's going on in your head, right? Like,
yeah,
just putting some effort into it, you know, whether it's reading or meditating or like, for me, it's little pieces of everything, right? And it's like a morning kind of ritual. And I'm not great at any of it, but just little pieces of everything kind of working together put me in a pretty, pretty good place. And I think, you know, and even if it's simple, even as simple as like daily gratitude or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But like, that affects me. I affect the world around me. And like all of a sudden everything's a lot more comfortable or whatever. It's just like
looking at things I work with a coach and, you know, she's always hammering home work, you know, look at things from a perspective of abundance, not scarcity.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of good shit going on in my life. If you focus on, and in everyone's life, people can find kernels of great shit, and not just kernels, like a whole fucking pile of good shit, you know?
Yeah.
And instead of looking at what could go wrong, look at what you really have. And that really helps in turning my own head around, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. If a bunch of people were to get together and like sit in a circle and throw their problems in the middle,
right?
Pretty sure my problems wouldn't be the biggest ones. So
burn them.
Yeah. Yeah, right. But like, you know, it's
but you've struggled with it's hard. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
It's, you know, and you know, it's, for me, it's a lot of like internal stuff too, and like talking about I don't really know how to talk about it that well because I'm not some fucking guru, right? I'm still just working on myself, that's all.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not looking for you to give me the answer, dude. Don't worry.
Cool.
you're one that doesn't, on stage, you're not vocalizing, you're not in the vocal mix, per se, right? Except for, I think I saw you sing a song once, maybe somewhere in the Milwaukee, or I don't know where it was. Maybe it was in Chicago, like last year. I don't know, am I dreaming that? But you're the talker of the group. So when there's a break in music, you're the one who addresses the audience, and that's a really great vibe. And I love your vibe up there. Talk to me a little bit about why that is within the structure of the band. Is it because you're not singing songs or harmonizing or whatever, but you're the guy that goes to the mic? That's not necessarily the normal formula. Normal is not a good word, but I don't see that a lot.
Yeah. It just feels, I don't know. It just feels natural for me. Like I consider myself to be an entertainer, mm-hmm. you know, as much as an artist, if not even more than an artist, there's no, like, we didn't sit down and say, okay, this is how we're going to do the show. Right. It's just kind of like, it just is the way it is. And some nights it's not me, but mm-hmm. It seems like for me, it seems natural, and it doesn't seem to annoy anybody else in my band. So it's kind of,
by default.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I don't have a good answer for you. It's just like, for me, I enjoy talking to people. And then you've all of a sudden, then they give you a microphone, and you're all of a sudden you're talking to 1,000 people, and I enjoy that too. What do you know?
Yeah, you're very comfortable doing it, and it's always great, and it always feels good to hear from you vocally that way. There's no real answer to it. It's just kind of an observation. I just wanted to get your take on.
Yeah, and one thing I do try and do at the end of the night, kind of like really just thank everybody for being there, like trying to do it, which is interesting. The more now that I thought about it, and like, it's something that I try and do every night, but try and really do it sincerely and like try and do something really sincerely night in and night out. It's like harder than you think, but I'm pretty sure I get the point. I'm pretty sure I'm getting the point across.
Well, you do. I mean, saying the words is all you can do, right? It's not like it sounds less genuine one night after the other. It might feel like that to you because you just said it last night. Just don't get the city wrong. That's all. That would be a key to that. But you've struggled with sobriety. You said before,
I fuck with that shit. I'm sober. Uh-huh. And it's a big part of my life. And I haven't really talked about it much, and I'm not sure where I'm at with that. We could probably just leave it at that. But important. It's a really important part of my life. And I work my ass off at it, and it feels great.
Great. Good. Congratulations. I don't need to dig.
Thanks.
I don't need to dig
all
really
good,
deep on it, man.
You
had mentioned it. I wasn't going to mention, I had no idea or anything. Yeah.
Good,
I know,
man.
Curtis is a great inspiration from that perspective as well. He talks about it a lot. So he's got to. Yeah.
He's great to have on the road. And, he's always wearing 15 different hats. So it's
literally
one of them,
them also.
Yeah. But I love the way he helps so many people. It's amazing. Super badass.
Yeah, that's great. Before I forget, just comment on the barfing incident recently. The only reason I'm circling back to that, because then like the 2 days after, you guys were jokingly selling barf bags at the merch table.
Come on.
Shit, man. Okay. Not talk about it or no, but I'm just like, you were on the stage when that occurred, man. And that's just like,
Well, to be honest, I didn't notice. And so the reports after the fact were the internet reports are that there was, which is great. I've never gotten so many fucking texts from musician friends. Jerry Douglas texted me about this like 2 weeks later when he got back from Europe, and he's like, is this real? And I'm like, you're late, dude. The internet report is that
we can say it.
Someone projectile vomited and shit themselves And that, which is, there's nothing weird about that at a show.
But then
that everyone else around them did like the reactive puke, whatever that's called, you know, like
peristaltic reaction.
Where everyone else started puking because it smelled so bad or because the guy puked or whatever.
Right.
Which is
it's like, an ancient, I mean, it's actually a physiological, like, evolutionary survival technique of humans that evolved from when, like, even back to caveman is how I understand. I didn't do research on this. I just kind of knew this is a stupid fucking fact if someone ate something bad and threw up, then others would throw up as well. Because there's as a chemical and physiological reaction to not eat, or if you had eaten the same thing, then you would also expel that thing that could potentially kill you. And that's kind of like an evolutionary thing.
Wow. That's interesting. I almost got through the whole day without learning something. And I
I'm glad I can help others.
Yeah. But so, and then the internet report continued to say that we stopped the show, things that aren't true. We didn't stop the show for the incident. Set break was just about to be set break.
That's what I heard as well.
And also there was no reactive puking from reports on the ground. There's just one guy that was having in talking about it. What I don't want to do is shame the dude or whatever.
I didn't even think it
must have sucked for him.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But my response has really just mostly been like, yeah, I got this new pedal and it really worked that night.
It had the right reaction. With that pedal.
I got those really low notes now that are, yeah.
Oh, right. We can move on because, like, yeah, it was one person. It was one person who got sick. Look, I could talk about it all day long. But yeah, it's not really that when you think about it in personal, in an individual perspective, it's like a guy got fucking sick at a show and like grossed people out. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, I feel bad for that guy. You're absolutely right by saying
that. I was at dead shows where that happens,
Yeah, right, exactly.
It happens, man.
You've fucking seen a lot.
Sucked for the guy, I know that much. As much as it sucked for everyone else, it sucked for the guy even more. So I hope he's all
right. Yeah, true, man. Thanks for putting that in perspective. But growing up, where'd you grow up?
I grew up outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
Villanova.
Villanova. Oh, is that with the university?
It's right by there. Yeah.
Okay. Musical family? Like, what's that?
Not particularly.
Uh-huh.
My parents encouraged me a lot. You know, they bought me a drum set when I was a kid.
Oh,
which
okay.
is a ridiculous thing to do.
Yeah.
They took me, they encouraged me with music and dropped me off at dead shows when I was 15 years old. It was like almost famous, like, don't do drugs.
Right.
My mom dropped me off.
You have a family whistle also.
Yeah, I mean, basically, yeah. And like, but I, you know, they let me go see three nights of Grateful Dead shows on school nights, three in a row on school nights when I was 15 years old. Not because they were stupid. It was because they knew that the music was that important to me. And I explained that it could be different every night.
Yeah.
And one of these nights might be the magic sauce, you know?
Right.
And like, and so to this day, I still thank them for that and tell them that they were, that it was fucking stupid. I tell them, I can't believe they did that, you know, right.
Did you take advantage of the fact that they gave you that level of freedom, or were you kind of like that good kid that sort of had that moral compass? Did you like, or did you just kind of go off and like?
I mean, I was 15 years old walking into a Grateful Dead show.
Yeah,
I had my share of fire, my share of fun.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
But like, you know, I'm in hindsight, I'm really thankful for that because I got to see like 33 shows with Jerry, and then I saw a ton of Fish shows back when I was a kid, and through whenever. But they trusted me, which I'm grateful for, and they were right,
Yeah.
But I think that really shaped my musical, like, that was when I had the, okay, cool, that's what I want to do moment,
Yeah. At those, just over the course of those 33 shows, or those three that you talked about in particular? What year was that? No, I mean, what year were those in general that you were talking about? Just to kind of get
92, 93.
Yeah, I lived in New York at the time. That's when I was seeing them too. I saw a bunch of shit. Yeah. The Garden, Nassau, and,
yeah. And Brendan so, yep. Yeah, and so like I, yeah, music and live music were always intertwined to me. Like literally the people will talk about music from like the '90s or whatever that was on the radio. And I'm like, I have no, I don't know this song. Mm-hmm. And they're like, how could you not know this song? And I'm like, well, I was listening to tapes from Grateful Dead.
Dude, I spent the entire '90s listening to Grateful Dead.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, I didn't
exclusively.
Yeah. And I'm like, so I just didn't know that I wasn't listening to the radio. But it's kind of so, but the reason I bring it up is like live music is music to me.
Yeah.
You know,
Synonymous with music. Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
And improvisation is what music is about to me. And like, you know, I also love making records, but I think that two things, we're a really good live band. Mm-hmm. We're also really good at making albums, which is to me kind of like a rare feat. Like often it's one or the other, right? It's like,
yeah, I love your albums, man. Stress Dreams. Amazing. The last three, four that you've done, not to take away from the earlier ones, but are really extraordinary. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love
them. Yeah, I mean, I love making them, and it's like, yeah, it's cool to get to do both and be in a place where it's like people can appreciate the albums, but people can appreciate the live shows too, and not have to be one or the other. You know?
It's a distinct art form is going into the studio and creating something for all time.
Time, you nailed it there. That's it. It's like you're making that
sonic statement, man.
Yeah, and you're saying that this is like, this is the, like, I can't think of the right word, but
I had a guitar teacher when I was growing up, Valley Arts Guitar, shout out, in Studio City, California, on Ventura Boulevard, which is actually the home of like Steely Dan and Larry Carlton and all these guys. My guitar teacher at the time, I was like, we were talking about soloing and stuff and how it was kind of be very precise and exact in a certain way and in recording an album. And he's like, you know, I said, well, you know, you just play, you just fucking jam, right? Cause you're just like playing for people. He's like, no, you're doing an album. You're committing to vinyl. And that always stuck with me.
Yeah. You're trying to make the ultimate version of that song.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to make sure that I mention that your recent album Broke Mountain Bluegrass Band, Cabin in the Hills, just came out in November. I do want to mention that.
Well, it's not recent. It was re-released. Oh, we recorded it 20 years. No, we recorded it 20 years ago.
Okay.
That Travis and Stick.
All right, I'm going to edit this out. No, I want to leave it in. I want to leave it in.
Well, which one? I don't know.
Well, it just came out.
Well, it just came out to the world. We've had it. You haven't been able to hear it. That's for sure.
Okay.
Like we've all had like 20 copies of the CD in like a drawer somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Right. That's all it ever, like it was never, he could never hear it.
Oh, okay.
But so this is an album that.
So I wasn't entirely wrong.
No, you weren't entirely wrong.
All right.
Pretty close to wrong though.
Yeah. Very close, but not entirely.
but So Travis Book, who's in the Infamous String Dusters, Andy Thorne, who's in Leftover Salmon, Stickley, who's in the Stickley Band, and Robin Davis, who plays with his wife in a duet. Like a pretty good group of musicians. We were all like very young men living in Durango, Colorado, or we met in Durango, Colorado and started this band. And, you know, Andy couldn't even get into bars that we were playing. He was too young to get into bars that we were playing. So just tell him he's in the band. It's cool. But we all were in a band together and ended up making that album, Cabin in the Hills.
So it's 20 years old. Is that sort of like the, was that your entree into bluegrass? I guess obviously you had gotten into it before that, but sort of what was that thing? Was it like listening to Olden in the Way? What was it for you back then? You've been listening to the Dead.
It was,
you're picking up the guitar.
It was through Olden in the Way. Just like everyone in my generation or or in these multiple generations.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, okay, I love the Dead. I love Jerry. Okay, Jerry was in some other band, and you go backwards, and you're like, he played banjo in Olden in the Way, and then you listen to that, and you're like, this is cool and fun. And then you're like, okay, what are these songs?
Right.
You realize they're all old Flat and Scruggs songs or Bill Monroe songs, and you sort of, and then you're like, oh, Grisman's in that band, and you get to the DGQ, and like, you just kind of like, my music listening sort of like devolves backwards in time, you know, where it's like,
yeah,
okay, what are they doing? And it's just like all of a sudden you're back at Flat and Scruggs listening to that stuff to see where they got these songs. And I like that stuff.
Yeah.
A big part of it for me also was the Grisman connection, because, you know, that leads to so much cool jazzy music, and at least to Tony Rice, who's, you know, it's also connected, but it really was definitely through Olden in the Way.
Yeah, I was psyched to be able to see them at the Vic, where you guys were I think end of last year. Railroad Earth played Olden in the Way with Peter Rowan.
Cool.
That was really fucking cool.
Cool.
Yeah. I loved that. And then, so when did you exactly connect with Paul and Bruza and who was it, Bont at the time?
I don't know what year it was, but I was in a band called the Wayward Sons, and we were playing some of the same festivals as Green Sky. And eventually I've sort of realized that we as a group realized that the Wayward Sons were not really cut out to be a full time touring band. Like, the road is hard when you're in a van. But I was not ready to be done seeking whatever I was seeking, you know, like it was not give up time for me yet. So I sort of I made a list of bands that I thought were cool that could use, that there's room for me, saw it musically, that I could spend a bunch of time with, and also that wrote good songs, because I was spending a lot of time around really good songwriters. So I wasn't going to join anything with like where the songs weren't
a big
thing. Like, just wasn't interested in that.
So like you approached these bands that you wrote down?
Well, I guess I sort of did. I reached out to Green Sky. I was like, hey, you know, I mean, there's an email, which supposedly someone still have, which we always threaten to read each other, but it's like, or I'm like, hey, you know, I think like what I could bring to the table is awesome. I think you guys, you know, basically a love letter.
Yeah. And so they picked up on that and like got in touch, and you guys.
Like, yeah. And so we were like, well, let's, you know, and we had jammed together before a little bit, you know, I'd sat in with them and stuff. So it was like, we were friends, and it obviously made sense. And then we did a little tour, that started as like, you know, it was basically just a trial run.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, it just was like Green Sky plus me. And
amazing.
This is back in the day when, like, you know, the last thing they wanted to do was to have to cut anyone else in on the $500 we were making a night, you know, like it was a big deal for them to say,
it was a hard sell for you to like, no, yeah, this is totally why you need me.
Yeah. Right. And it was like,
100%.
And I, you know, it's crazy to think back on that for me, because I don't know. I mean, to look at where we're at now and to think that like, the choice that I made or whatever, like, to think about how impactful that decision has been on my life is crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's been almost
just by sort of being like, yeah, those guys are cool.
Yeah. So what's your, so you were like 2004-07 time frame with them. So you're coming up on your own personal 20th anniversary soon. Cause like the band, like Paul and those guys did 20th during COVID, the 20th anniversary.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Green Sky's been a band for 20 years. I'm getting up on my,
on your anniversary.
Them, but,
that'll have to be a special. I'm coming to that fucking show. Call that show out. I'm coming to that one, dude. Yeah, you can go off like you did at the Salt show. But I just wanted, before I need to let you go, because you got to get going on doing your thing today. But that said, connecting with the band, making that choice in that framework, you're fucking playing the Ryman this weekend. Like, I mean, talk to me a little bit about that and how meaningful that's got to be for you. I mean, even, it's not the first time you played at the Ryman, but you know, Ryman, right. Red Rocks, these big venues, you love live music. You're at Red Rocks, I think it was last year, for three nights, opening with Monument, mm-hmm. which is a song that you wrote on Stress Dreams. That just gives me fucking goosebumps. I fucking love that song. And I just, that you're opening
there.
Thanks, man. Yeah. Thank you, dude.
Yeah.
Ryman's coming up. I just like, get your thoughts on that, playing big venues, well, and sort of like, we'll tie it up nicely in a bow.
Yeah, I mean, the Ryman is super, super cool for its historic value in bluegrass music and country music. Mm. You know, it's like, that's where the Grand Ole Opry was. That's where everyone played everything that everybody heard on the radio that influenced everybody. Like, it's the mother church of music. There's a statue of Bill, there's a statue of Bill Monroe outside. It says the birthplace of bluegrass, literally right outside the door. Yeah. And like, yeah, last time we were there, you know, I was standing on the stage with Sam Bush, and he's like, so when I was 9 years old or 11, whatever, you know, it's his story, but he's like, I was sitting right up there, and points to the place that he first came into the Ryman, and he was a very young kid. He said, and Bill Monroe is standing right here, and points to the stage, and like, and he's like, that's, you know, that's where I decided to start playing mandolin. Like, you know, just like that level of history of that place. Right.
Right.
And so for me, like that, it's a historic place, and it's fun to get to go do what we do in there. You know, it's like, that's the coolest thing about it for me, is that it's not like we're doing like a, you know, the Ryman is now a place where you can go and play whatever music you want. It doesn't have to be like, you know, suit and tie bluegrass.
Yeah. Which is cool too. I mean, that they bring all kinds of different bands in there of all sorts of genres. Yeah. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. But that sort of historical thing is special to me. And like you brought up Red Rocks, and that's like, I mean, that's always been like my place. I moved to Colorado in 1996 or so, and went to school to go to college there. And, that's where I remember I was at, there was a four night fish run there in 96. And I remember, like, I very distinctly remember thinking to myself, looking at the band on stage and being like, that's what I want to do when I grow up. so now imagine my feelings when I'm walking on stage at a sold out Red Rocks. Like,
I know,
man. You know, it's like, that is, wait, I'm doing what I wanted to do when I grow up. Like, and I thought about it, and I can remember that feeling of thinking about it. Like, it's a serious, serious head trip in a great way, you know, like, but it's also heavy. You know, that, like, our pictures on the wall backstage there when you're walking in with like a bunch of all these other, with a bunch of like crazy big artists, you know? And like, that one's always kind of emotional for me. Like, we started doing two nights cause they changed everything around up there. And so now we do two nights. And like, which is still a huge deal. Right. but like, just, you know, sometimes in an interview or something, people are like, well, do you ever get nervous or something? And it's like, no, I don't get nervous, but certain places just fuck me up. Okay. Like, and it's not a negative thing, but it's like places like Red Rocks or like Telluride Bluegrass Festival. It's usually somewhere that involves nature, you know, like
interesting.
I'm fine with playing to 10,000 people, but it's like when I'm playing to like these giant rocks or mountains and stuff like that, that's when I'm like, whoa, this is crazy.
Well, you can do that anytime, but to load it up with people yeah. also is like another factor.
Well, yeah. Right. But like, you know, I've told this to some people before, but like Red Rocks is still like, I'm like, okay, you know, you're walking up there on the stage. And it's like, all right, I got this. And then those lights go down and it's like, and I'm just like, I don't got this. Who am I kidding? Let's go do it. You know?
Yeah.
But it's like, there's a wall of people that you see from stage there. You know,
it's like, amazing.
But, you know, I think to put a bow on it with playing places like that and, you know, the Ryman or like any of these cool, like, I mean, the Salt Shed was a huge show just this week. And, but any of these bigger places, it's like, it's such an amazing feeling, like, to have that many people care about what we do. And the notes that I play and the music that we make up, like it is such a beautiful thing for me, you know, and I know that there's people in the crowd that are like, this is so beautiful for them. And it's like, whatever it is. But for me, you know, just being in those situations, it's like, I've seen myself take it for granted before.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely am not taking it for granted now at all, but just like, you know, like feeling those moments is really one of the coolest things that there is. Like that, it's what I've always loved about live music, and now I'm on the other side of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But like, you said you've seen yourself take it for granted before.
Yeah, I mean, over years of like whatever, just being in a different headspace, like
I've taken
for granted walking off stage of Red Rocks or whatever, like
right. Not fully appreciated the moment for what it really is. And now you have kind of like a lot more perspective, it seems, and talking about your roots with Green Sky and beginning with them and Seeing Fish and like that whole thing, and that you guys are playing it in September again. And
Yeah, and just, you know, just kind of being older and wiser, like we're all getting. Hopefully.
I know, same here, man. I mean, it's that operating from a perspective of abundance, you know, like you got good shit going on, you know, and be grateful for all that good shit too.
Yeah, that's the deal.
And you're able to bring that and bring your love of all that to your fans and to the audience on almost a nightly basis, you know. It's really great stuff, man.
I wish I could have you for longer,
Anders. You know, would have asked 10 more questions about shit, man.
Let's do it again.
Of each subject. I'd love to, man. Some other time.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm down.
Okay. Cool. A couple hours next time. Yeah. I promise I'll make it interesting, man.
I'm having fun.
All right, good.
Let's do it again.
All right. So you got more time now? No. All right, man. Hey, thanks so much for being here, Anders. It was truly a pleasure. I'm a big fan. You know that. Love what you do. And thanks for being you, man. I appreciate you.
I really appreciate it, man. Thanks for digging what we do. And thanks for, you know, talking to the people making the music that you like. That's cool. It's a great way to give back and sort of like share the appreciation on a bigger level. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. That's what I do, man. That's what I love to do for the audience, you know, and like, because I love it so much. I want to find out what it is behind, like what makes you, and we got a good sense of that. Like what makes you want to do what you do? Why do you do what you do? And what is it that you feel that mm-hmm. you do and the impact mm-hmm. that you have on others is great.
Yeah. It's cool. It's cool to kind of unpack all that stuff. I dig it.
Thanks, man.
All right, I appreciate you.
Cheers, buddy. Appreciate you too. Love you, man. Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, that was me talking to the one and only Anders Beck of Green Sky Bluegrass. I guess it was no secret during that interview is how much I like and love the music of Green Sky. Yeah, I'm a huge fan. And I loved when I had Paul Hoffman on the show, who plays mandolin and as vocalist for Green Sky, and having Anders on the show was a delight for me. And he's just a delightful human. And it was really great to hear him kind of work through his own answers on for this one. Sorry I didn't have him for a little bit longer, but we did talk about maybe doing a part two at some point, and that would be wonderful whenever that might happen someday. I loved talking to Anders and understanding kind of the deep gratitude that he has where he's currently at the point in his life where he's currently at right now. And I kind of really sensed that towards the end. He says he's just in a really good place in his life right now. You know, he's had his struggles with sobriety, apparently. And I mean, it's just a challenge for anyone. I can't speak to that personally, but from what I understand from so many that I've spoken to that are currently sober, I applaud him for that. He's really got his head straight and really very self-reflective, and I really really enjoyed that. So amazing to hear him talk about the Phish shows at Red Rocks that he saw when he truly decided that that's what I want to do. And that's what he did. And that was how he reflected upon when we spoke about him being at Red Rocks there at the end and playing there recently. Like you could sense that sort of childlike amazement of his own that he did what he set out to do, and he's kind of really living the dream, which is so amazing. And interesting at the beginning how he talked about that self-doubt of playing when I pointed out how amazing he was playing at the Salt Shed that night. But and in reflection of that, he was like sort of talking about, yeah, sometimes I'm really playing well and I'm kind of having that, I'm in that flow state. And then once I start thinking about it and get it in my head, it's gone. That's just a really good kind of analogy for anybody, because it's so challenging to just stay in the moment and stay out of one's head. And once you start getting up in your head will tell you fucking lies, and it'll tell you that you can't do things or that whatever you're doing is just wrong. And that's just not true. Your brain says shit that it doesn't know what it's saying. It was really cool to hear Anders talk about that, because it's absolutely, totally true. And those are important lessons for everybody in whatever we do in our lives. But it's so tough and it's so very challenging. So I try to live by that. And, it's challenging for me. It's challenging for everybody. But from a performance perspective, just that flow state, and then where he was truly into it. And that was just really beautiful to hear. I covered the barfing incident too that you heard of. It was a current event in the Green Sky world, and I felt like it was incumbent upon me to just like ask him a question about it. I know it's gross and everything, and I'm so sorry to the individual that was sick. I just kind of, what was that like from the stage? So we got that story. But this was a really great one. If you've made it this far and you're not really familiar with what Green Sky Bluegrass does, please go download Nugs, listen to their live shows. They've got plenty of live performances and albums up on the streaming platforms. They did a whole series of live shows in September of 2021 that are all up on the streaming platforms. Just absolutely amazing stuff. I can't say enough about this band, and I can't say enough about Anders Beck of Green Sky, who really, for me, personifies what Green Sky is really doing out there. The dobro is just one of my favorite instruments, and Anders absolutely rocks it. So if you made it this far, thanks so much for being here for this episode number 225 of Roadcase Podcast. So happy that you were here for this one. So thank you very much for that. And I want to send a special thank you to Anders Beck for being here on this episode of Roadcase. Thanks again so much for listening. And I'd like to encourage everyone to get involved with Roadcase. You can do so in a number of different ways. You can email me at info@roadcasepod.com with questions, comments, and even suggestions for guests. Or you can follow us on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We're at Roadcase Pod. And we have a YouTube channel called Roadcase Podcast. And of course, you can subscribe to this podcast on your favorite listening platform. And if you could please rate and review the podcast while you're there, that would be great. So I want to thank Waltzer for this awesome theme music that we have. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening to Roadcase. We have a lot of great episodes coming up, so I'll see you on down the road.